previously on Getting the Mecha.
Such animations, everything from how they move their hands to how they walk around the room, is a sign to some extent as to how they patch up or protect or even just show what they're going through. What is great about WEP is that it gives us the ability to interpret emotions from two sides of the same coin. We're able to understand the human character through both. I'm Jamal, and you're listening to Getting the Mecha, your weekly anime and manga analysis podcast. From inspiring arcs to game-changing cinematography, I'm on a journey to try and make sense of it all, episode by episode. Enjoy the show. Welcome back to Getting the Mecha, and in today's episode we are talking about Wonder Egg Priority. And I have spoken about this anime in the past, but this time I want to take a different angle. As you probably heard in the previously section, I spoke about character acting in that episode, and I really did enjoy that one, and I kind of couldn't resist doing another one. And so this time we're going to talk about action animation. But before we do that, I just want to, as always, introduce myself. I'm Jamal. I like to talk and really think about anime, hopefully on a slightly deeper and analytical level, although that is obviously up for interpretation. And yes, so in this episode we're going to be thinking about Wonder Egg Priority, and I want to try and just talk a bit about some of these animators who have touched this project and what action in Wonder Egg Priority is really good for, and how good is it, as in what do these specific animators do to make this really work and come together. As always, if you do enjoy this podcast and you are on, say, Apple Podcasts, it would be lovely if you left it a review on iTunes. That helps out the show a ton, and I'm trying to build up reviews, so if you could be part of that, that would also be, it would mean a lot to me. And without further ado, let's get into the episode for this week. That is episode 83 of Getting the Mecha, a look at fighting animation in Wonder Egg Priority. The way I like to start these episodes, as always, is giving you an alert in terms of spoilers. And this is going to be quite similar to my Gurren Lagann analysis and also the Wonder Egg Priority character acting talk as well, which I do highly recommend checking out before you check out these episodes. This is something I didn't manage to speak about in the character acting episode, and it's just as relevant. It's about influence and style and aesthetic. This isn't something we covered last time, and it's something good to cover now, because I think that will, in a way, it more informs character acting and stuff and cinematography in those areas, but it can, to an extent, influence action too. It's a lot less easy to actually talk about what the exact style or stylistic influence of Wonder Egg Priority really is. I think Wakabayashi has actually conjured up quite a very unique image, and something I haven't really come across too much. I have heard, and I do in part agree, that there is some sort of Naoki Yamada school influence in regards to its aesthetic and some of its cinematography. But that being said, I think that shouldn't be too overstated. I do agree that it's there. It's pretty obvious to see it, but beyond the very surface level, I think that can be overstated. I say that because there isn't too much of a precedent for action within Yamada works. There's very minimal precedent. And as a result, I think we have to try and see WEP as its own thing and its own anime and its own way of understanding and building up action. The episode directors and storyboarders have done an excellent job at creating very unique episodes and very unique action sequences too, mostly in the way that they're able to sort of tap into and also distance themselves from realism at times. Unlike, say, character acting, which is really to build this sense of realism and build up this idea that it is relatable to the human experience, I would say that action is the reverse of this, or not even the reverse, it has its feet planted in both sides. It attempts to tap into the real, because that is what makes fights pretty convincing, but at the same time it's based on a rather unrealistic premise to some extent. As a result, it's very hard to dub action as doing a very specific thing for One Direct Priority. But as this episode will show, these animators are insanely talented at bringing out both sides of this coin. In this week's episode, rather than focusing on animators in twos, I'm actually going to focus on them in ones or individually. I still think the pair idea is pretty good, but for this episode, I think in terms of length, because there are a lot of staff on this project and a lot of different key animators, and also for the purpose of giving attention to some which I didn't mention in other episodes or the previous episode, I'm going to focus specifically on three of them. So the first animator we'll be talking about, and someone that's actually more than an animator this time, is Yusuke Kawakami. I think I did briefly mention Kawakami in the last time we did talk about One Direct Priority, but it was kind of just skimmed past them as in their role, and that role actually is them as action animation director. I don't really know how to comment on how Kawakami functions as an action animation director. I assume that they obviously do corrections on the work as most animation directors would do, but I'm not really going to try and get into that because I don't know the technicalities into what work they've corrected and how exactly they correct it. But in the case of Kawakami as an animator, a quick backstory, I actually learned about Kawakami's work from Fate Grand Order Babylonia, specifically Episode 0, where they have this magnificent cut which introduces us to MASH for the first time in like a Fate Grand Order series that was made by Cloverworks. What is really unique about Kawakami is that they often, or at times, they utilize Blender, which is, if you're not aware, it's a modeling software. I don't really know how to explain it very well, but it has the capabilities of making 3D or just at least computer-generated effects, and that's what most animators use it for. If not, they're using it for background animation, which Kawakami also uses. On that note, when it comes to background animation, Kawakami really understands the value of immersion within action. These two things are pretty much inextricably linked. I feel like one of the main purposes of a fight is to become invested within it and to become invested within the antagonism of which it's portraying. We'll get a bit more into that as this episode progresses, but Kawakami understands this straight away from the first major cut which I saw from them, which was within episode 2. Their background animation is phenomenal, as from the main boss fight in episode 2 when we have Ai swinging around the gymnasium, and then the cord of which he has is burning across, and then the cord of which the boss throws at her, I believe, which she grabs onto, that burns through these railings, and that is all animated by Kawakami as they slide through the railings. I don't think it's confirmed whether they used Blender or 3D, and I'm not going to try and confirm that on this podcast because I honestly don't know, but either way, I think that just shows a great amount of attention to detail, and I want to explain why background animation is so good in this context. And I think it's so good because it creates a sense of scale, as if the boss is central and also very destructive to the environment. When we have backgrounds which feel a lot more flexible and not just as a backdrop only, background animation plays a very good part in making it feel convincing, as if we're in a actual arena or the setting that we're in. That's the good point that I'm trying to get to. It's the setting which we're in does not feel only like a backdrop, but it's actually utilized to enhance the fight. And I suppose that shows intentionality not only from Kawakami, but from the storyboarders from these episodes. I would also say background animation works well in how it creates what I would like to call idealized camera, or the camera can work in almost any way one decides to see fit. As in, for example, when Ai is on these rails, this isn't something we would typically be able to capture with a camera very well, unless we had, say, a dolly track that was moving at a very constant speed to capture Ai also moving at this accelerating pace across the railings. That would be very difficult. I don't know physics very well, so I'm not going to try and get into that, but I can tell that that would be a very difficult thing to do. But with animation and background, code animation as a technique, that becomes a lot easier to do, or at least we can make these things possible. I don't want to downplay how hard these things are, because I'm sure it's difficult to actually animate, but I just mean that it can be done. Things that can't be done so easily and resource-wise within live action can be done thanks to background animation. I think there's a potential to think of 2D animation as 2D, at least on the very surface level, we can think of it as flat. You have to consider that within 2D animation, there are many ways in which we can create depth, and I feel as if background animation is a super effective way of doing this. This is something that's been within anime and 2D for ages. It's done especially in anime, like, for example, just some very general examples, like in a lot of car-related OVAs or something, when you'll be going through a tunnel and then the tunnel will actually be hand-drawn and animated. That's a good example of 2D background animation that's been going on since Kingdom Come, basically. And it's the same with now, but background animation has taken up a different form. And I think Kawakami's done really good at showing me how background animation can be used so well to make these environments seem a lot more in-depth and real, really. And I suppose you could say that Kawakami does both add to the realism of One Direct Priority by creating these more in-depth environments, but at the same time, because the camera can reach these places that we wouldn't really be able to see before, and these environments look a lot more in-depth and such, it is kind of going beyond realism. So it kind of does what we just said at the beginning, as in it stepped in both sides. A location, it will always be a location, but it's how you use the location to bring convincingness to the fight. It feels as if we've intentionally been brought to a specific place to achieve a specific aim, because it has certain quirks and perks, etc. I've spoken quite a lot about background animation and Kawakami now, so I think it's a good time to move on to our next animator, which is Takiya Ninuma. I've been really invested within Ninuma's work from the very beginning of this series, or at least when they first premiered onto the project. I'm also very upset that I hadn't come across Ninuma in previous projects before, because they are stunning and they have really wowed me. I've learned quite a lot about different animators in One Direct Priority, and I feel almost blessed that I've learned about the Ninuma name now, because I can tell that this animation work is only them getting started. Because if they're doing this, then I'm trying to imagine what they'll do in the future. I'm not going to waffle as much as I did in regards to the previous section, so I'm just going to get straight to the point here and say that I love Ninuma's work. And my favorite cut from them comes from episode 6. Just to set the scene for anyone that's maybe forgot what happened in that episode, we're in the bathroom and we're fighting this invisible boss for the week and within this egg realm. And the problem, as I just mentioned, is the fact that they're invisible, so we can't see them. And as a result, I takes the chance to try and swing at this monster, but we obviously, again, can't see it. And so the camera does this really amazing thing, or at least the camera work just switches up completely. We are looking at Ai from behind, the camera is, and as she's swinging forwards, she's then knocked multiple times by the boss. And that sounds kind of underwhelming from the description, but how it's achieved and how it's done by Ninuma is honestly masterful. I know for those that keep up with animation related vocabulary and things like that, the smearing doesn't really need much of an introduction, but for those who are new, a smear is basically an extension of a movement. In very simple terms, how that is achieved, the reason why I'm explaining it simply is because how it is achieved is so versatile. There are so many ways you can smear, and there isn't one way of doing so. But in the case of Ninuma, what they do is that when Ai is being hit, they extend the face outwards and it sort of stretches from its original position. And what I find awesome about this is that it kind of compensates for the very 2D nature of these works. 2D is very maybe reductionist or reductive in how 2D doesn't mean that there's no depth, but I just mean it's hard to tell from the angle of being behind, or at least from being behind her eyes, very hard to tell when her face is moving outwards or when she's being hit. And so as a result, I think Ninuma does a really smart thing by moving outwards. And by moving the face outwards, we can see part of Ai's face, which we wouldn't typically see from behind. So it's not only smart camera work, but it's smart smearing as well, to understand that her face is being hit left and right, as opposed to kind of just being hit and not facing the camera. I also love this Ninuma cut because of the shaky camera work which comes with it too. And when we have such beautiful smearing from the animator, what's great is that when the camera doesn't necessarily catch it in the frame, so it smears and almost pushes them outwards as Ai is hit, she's sort of hit out of frame, and that kind of adds to this very rough and brutal element that comes with Wonder Egg Priority. Wonder Egg does not try to be, or it, sometimes it does have that sort of false sense of security in how it's very jovial at times. I see at times, not all the time, but when it needs to, it gets down to business, because this is a serious anime about serious issues. And this bathroom scene by Ninuma reminds us about how serious and brutal this show can be, and how brutal the world of the realm of these eggs really are. In summary, I'll just say that Ninuma's animation throughout this series is a big reality check. It throws us back into, this is, again, a serious anime about serious issues. We're not only fighting for our friends, but we're fighting for the lives of others within these egg realms. And it will really, or Ninuma's work really hones in on this idea. Then our final animator for this episode is Harumi Yamazaki. Harumi Yamazaki is probably the go big or go home action animator of this series for me. The sequences which they've worked on are insanely ambitious, and they've executed so well on all of them. And I couldn't ask for more from Yamazaki, and I couldn't really ask for more from any of these animators. All these episodes back to back so far have been phenomenal. Hopefully, I say hopefully, that can continue, but even so, these staff have worked so hard, and Yamazaki has just shown that this anime is not playing. I'm not very qualified to talk about Yamazaki's action sequences yet. I think as the series progresses, I'll do better, but I do have a few smaller points here and there. One of them is that I really love how they animate hair, and hair is a really important thing in anime. I suppose hair is a rather unique thing as well in terms of how it's stylized and stuff across the board, and in Wonder Egg Priority, it's handled really well, and I really love how Yamazaki has their take on it too. They animate hair in this very sharp way, so when we see, for example, Rika dropping from the sky, her hair is very sharp on the edges, and that's something you kind of expect considering her hair type and how it looks and such, but when it's in the air, it kind of again has this aggressive and sharp look, similarly to the blades of which they're using. And I like to think that bodily features and parts all contribute to the image of anime characters and how they perform in fights, but also just how they're feeling generally. If we think back to animators like Hironori Tanaka, hair means everything for aggression and such, and I think Yamazaki does a very similar thing during their action work as well. I'm also a very big fan of how Yamazaki reduces their drawing counts on occasion, so sometimes they mostly animate in twos, but they're able to switch it up and lower the drawing count for threes. I really enjoyed this part in episode 4 where as Ai is running up closer and she's approaching the boss in the episode, as she's like running to build up her speed for the attack of which she's going to do, Yamazaki reduces the drawing count to threes, and I like how that creates it doesn't look slower, but it creates a sense of momentum being built and the camera sort of slowing down to capture it. I don't know if that makes sense, if I'm completely honest, but as I said, I don't think I'm too qualified to talk about how Yamazaki's animation works, just because it's just like something I've never seen before, honestly. It's kind of like most of the animators on web, so Let me just say that I love Yamazaki's work. It's very ambitious. It's very large scale as well. When I see how much Yamazaki animates for an action sequence, I'm genuinely amazed, because I'm like, when they post their LOs or their Gengas on Twitter, I'm just like, how are they doing this? How much are they doing, and how big can they really go? And so that kind of brings me near the end of this episode. In the case of Yamazaki specifically, Harumi Yamazaki's work reminds me that animation and the fighting meta of animation within anime can be pushed so far. Just when you think you know how things can be done, there will always be an animator out there that can completely rewire how you think about action, or just take the very things which you think are evolving or might be, it can't be pushed anymore, and they go ahead and push it for themselves. And not even just a Yamazaki, but generally a lot of these animators have showed me that the action we've been seeing might simply just be the tip of the iceberg. And I don't mean that to undermine the work of other animators. I don't mean that they're not doing awesome and new things, but I just mean that Wonder Egg Priority has taken a lot of those things and taken it to another level, honestly. How this will progress into the rest of the series, I'm unsure. I don't have any information on this, and I'm not a reporter. I don't know. But I hope for the best, and I think it can move forward, continuing this sort of pushing of the meta. Wonder Egg Priority's action works to provide realism, but also go beyond the real and teach us about how far action can go beyond just the realistic limits which we have, which don't exist within animation. And equally on the realism point, it grounds the anime in part. It takes us back to the very central ideas of the anime that concerns these internal battles which these girls are facing, and the issues they have in their own lives, and this sense of anger and brutality, and this very visceral look comes through within a lot of its action. Thank you for listening to this episode of Get on the Mecha. That has been episode 83. This is going to be kind of weird. I'm not actually doing closing thoughts, just because I feel like I basically did say all my closing thoughts in this section, or in the just past section, so I think it'd be a bit pointless if I just repeated everything I said just again. But it's just that realism is so valuable in Wonder Egg Priority, but also it's able to go beyond the real, and I've never really felt in a position where an anime can do both, where it can teach us about the real, but it also can teach us about what isn't real too, and how fighting can do both. So that was a really interesting thing to explore in this episode, and hopefully you got some value from it. As always, if you do enjoy this podcast, leaving a review on Apple Podcasts, a very nice review, would be very helpful and very welcome. Also, if you do the YouTuber stuff, so if you like, subscribe, leave a comment, press the bell for notifications, I don't know, add it into a playlist, any of those things would be very appreciated. And then finally, if you could share this episode with anyone that likes Wonder Egg Priority, that would also be a very cool thing. Stay safe, enjoy Wonder Egg Priority, and I will see you next week. So I have been your host Jamal today, and this has been Get in the Mecha. The music in this production goes as follows. Synthwave by Alex, by Alex McCulloch, Mandatory Overtime by Joth, and Anomaly by Eric Medea's UndersoundImage.org.